Welcome to Pet Food Advisors. I'm Tracy Hotchner, a pet wellness advocate with a special interest in dog and cat nutrition, here to help you unravel the mysteries of pet food so you can make thoughtful decisions about feeding your own dogs and cats. This show is a production of Pet Media, Inc., with opinions and information that are the sole responsibility of the expert guests who offer them. The Radio Pet Lady Network is partnered with my other enterprise, the Dog Film Festival, which celebrates the remarkable bond between dogs and their people. I will be taking the festival across the United States, including Washington, D.C., East Hampton, New York, Rochester, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Phoenix. And I hope to see you at the second annual Dog Film Festival, October 15th in New York City. You can find more information at dogfilmfestival.com. This show is made possible in part by Precious Cat Litter, owned by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian in Colorado, who has created innovative litters for the health of all members of the family, with low-dust litters that allow everyone to breathe easier. Precious Cat's newest health monitor litter has broken new ground by allowing people to find the early signs of kidney disease in their kitties and intervene before damage is done, prolonging the quality and health of their kitty cat's lives. I am very glad to be here yet again with Dr. Greg Martinez. I've talked to him before about diet, and he has a new book. It is absolutely gorgeous, The Dog Diet Answer Book, Complete Nutrition Guide to Help Your Dog Live a Happier, Healthier, and Longer Life. And I must say, I get a lot of diet books and food books and recipe books. This one really is the one that you need to have on your shelf. It jumps out at you. It addresses so many issues without any bias, but just facts and information. Great drawings, great pictures, great graphs. Oh, I love this book, Dr. Greg. You did a great job.
Well, thank you so much, Tracy. It was a lot of work and a lot of editing, but I'm glad it's so appealing to you.
Very appealing to me, who is like the nutrition nut. I don't like to sell. It used to be you could call yourself a pet foodie. Then it turns out you're kind of like an extremist. I ain't no extremist. I understand the realities of life for people, whether it's time, money, convenience. But I also know that we are what we eat. And the more we can get to cleaner, simpler foods for dogs, the better off they're going to be. And having been in private practice for over 35 years in Gilroy, California, I imagine that, I hope that your patients, the human ones, I guess the humans are clients and the dogs and cats are patients, I hope they realize how lucky they are to have a vet who thinks completely outside the bag and the box. You see this from a bird's eye view in such a clear way. Do you find patients and clients coming to you because they've heard you are the dog food doc, you really know your stuff and you care?
Yeah, I think I've got the benefit of being so out there with the books, and then I have some videos online if people want to also watch those. I have a YouTube channel, Dr. Greg's Veterinary Views on YouTube. Ooh. And I actually cook and I show them how to crock pot, and then I also do some veterinary procedures that might not be so pleasant.
Wow, but that's very cool. So someone who's thinking of becoming a vet or a vet tech or a surgical nurse can see what that looks like and go, cool or ew, right, depending.
Exactly. Do everything from cooking to emptying anal glands to the routine spays and neuters, and I just have it out there for clients and also for veterinary technicians in training, and found out that veterinarians around the world watch them too.
How neat.
For educational stuff, and I really enjoy doing it. So
I think
but
that's
anyway,
great.
I found that, people come to me because they find that I'm able to talk to them on many levels about dog food, from somebody that can't afford much to somebody
yes.
that wants the best and has no economic considerations. So,
correct.
But I try to make it very simple, avoiding allergens, feeding the right number of calories. It's not too hard when you break it down like I tried to do in the book.
Well, you make it seem much easier than someone like me who's immersed in it and thinks I have the answers, and then this bell goes off in my head. You know, I have these two young Weimaraner females, and they're both right around 80 pounds. They're really big dogs, and I want to keep them slim. You can see their ribs when they move. I'm not talking that kind of lean, mean look that they're supposed to have to live longer, and I'd like to get closer to it. And what I'm beginning to to think about, again, having thought about it before, and you address it in great detail in the book, and I'd like to talk about the idea of feeding canned food, or you could crock pot and make your own, as long as, you know, you do the whole balance thing as per Balance It or Dr. Greg or whomever. But the idea that the calories in kibble, I've always had this idea that these big, extremely active dogs need that kind of feeling of satiety or fullness from kibble, or that somehow those carbs give them some extra boost. And now I'm feeling like if I buy the extra large can of Halo Spot Stew and I divide it between the two of them at each meal, I feel like, is that so expensive, or is that actually a great investment? Can you talk a little bit about having a large breed dog and whether you can afford to feed canned food only, and whether you believe in it, or wet food, we'll call it, because you also cook?
Yeah, the feeding canned food is more expensive, and that makes people usually opt for a dry food. But if you can afford it, I think canned food has less preservatives, and it has a better balance of nutrients. It doesn't have as many carbohydrates as dry food in general, and dogs don't need the carbs as much. They basically can survive on protein and fat. And so that is a consideration, especially if dogs tend to get heavy. Sometimes I feel that the carbohydrates contribute to more weight, even though fat and the calorie density, which is just more fat in the diet, is also a big contributor.
But you do say in the book, you have some great, like, little sound bites, I want to call them. They're not exactly charts, all of them, but it captures ideas in kind of colored boxes, that the calories of canned food are lower than the equivalent, I guess, energy ergs of dry. That
right.
We have this idea that somehow wet food, you should only give a little taste of it because it's more fattening, but it's really the dry dog foods that are quote-unquote fattening.
Right, and the thing is that dry foods tend to have more calories per ounce in general because they're dry and the water's been taken out, and water dilutes calories. Canned food is usually 25 calories per ounce, and the dry food is up 35, 40 calories per ounce and more. Canned food can be a good solution for those dogs that tend to gain weight, in dry food, even if you have a dog that's overweight, a large breed dog, and you want to feed it a wetter food, you can wet down a good quality dry food, or you can mix the canned with the dry and wet it down to where the dry is a moist variety. Turn it into a canned food by making it wetter.
but by the same token, you don't have the same ingredients, not even close to
no.
the same ingredients. And I mean,
no.
That's really the issue. I feed also a dehydrated food that has loads of
right.
fruits and vegetables, as well as, you know, no grains, kind of low carb and some protein. But the idea that canned food with some of that, just, I don't know, to add more greenery or something, that you need a whole lot less to satisfy a dog. I think what it goes down to is there's always been the South Beach diet and the Atkins diet, and now they call it paleo, which, sorry, folks, it's utter nonsense. Cave people did not eat blueberries or whatever it is that they didn't eat blueberries. Please, give me a break. Paleo schmaleo. What we're really talking about is a high-protein, high-fat, low-carb diet. It's always
right.
been what worked for people to not be fat or to burn up fat or not get fat in the first place. And I don't know, I just feel like if the can costs, I don't know, pick a number, $4, and you divide that between two dogs and it's $2 a meal each, isn't that a great investment? I mean, you talk about that in the book as being an investment in health, because staying lean and mean, not in temperament, but, you know, the other kind of lean, like boxing weight, that's what keeps a dog healthy, and as you say, keeps them out of your office with problems.
Right, and no, it's a very important. I think canned food, like I said, has less preservatives. It has better nutrients. The better canned foods,
yes,
have better nutrients in general. Just like you said, Tracy, they have vegetables and meat, and the complex carbohydrates of vegetables and fruits are better than grains or rice, and so that makes them a better choice.
So if someone, okay, people who have economic constraints, really, it's sort of in my mind,
sort of falls into the category of humans who have economic constraints on what they can eat. And yet they're in the pizza parlor, they're in the fast food joint, they're in the most horrible aisles of the supermarket spending, I don't buy corn chips, and then I go to look at them and they're like $4 or $5 a bag. And then they've got Gatorade, and then they've got Coca-Cola. Now, obviously, if they could just go to the vegetable aisle and get an inexpensive cut of chicken, I mean, chicken is so inexpensive in America, or even, you know, whatever fish is on sale, and make a crock pot meal for the humans, they would be spending so much less, and they wouldn't be in these obese conditions for all the horrible chemicals that's in all the junk food. Wouldn't that be true of dogs, too? That it's not really definitely cheaper to feed dry food because you're getting a big, fat, sickened dog. What are some of the ways in your crock potting? I'm looking forward to seeing these YouTube videos. But there must be very inexpensive ways to cook a week's worth of food for a medium-sized dog in your big crock pot, right?
Right. What you can do is you can take chicken. You can even take a young fryer, which is fairly inexpensive.
Yes, very.
Or skinless breasts. And you can throw them in a crock pot with vegetables. I usually use green beans or peas or carrots.
Yep.
And sweet potatoes are also great because of all the vitamins and minerals in there. And you can make a big old pot of food, and then you can freeze the excess that you don't feed. And it makes it very affordable. The biggest thing is just don't change any dog, and I go over that in the book and in my little videos on YouTube. I go over how to transition your pet into eating that kind of food, because you don't want to change them suddenly, and you got to be real careful with the fat content and vegetable content, because it does irritate some dogs that aren't used to it.
Irritate meaning they get some diarrhea or lose stool, but the
stomach ache, indigestion, a little bit of diarrhea. But
it's not the end of the world. I mean, having a firm stool is not the sort of yardstick of health. I often think that, you know, all these pet food companies want a firm, pick-upable stool. But just think of people with their infants. Did anybody ever hope that their infant – well, they do hope their infant's diaper would be these firm, hard, not stinky stool. Baby's stool is really loose and yucky and disgusting. That's okay, guys. That's not abnormal. You know, we aren't looking to feed food that gives us great poo. It gives us a greatly healthy dog. I guess the other the issue of transition is really for the stomach to get used to digesting real food if all it's ever had is highly processed carb, which is kibble, and it's never had to learn to digest a diversity of ingredients, sort of like someone who's been at sea or on a desert island living off some pathetic, you know, not very interesting tiny diet, and then they come back and they have to try, you know, steak dinner and spaghetti, and it's hard on their stomach to remember how to digest it, but it's not making them sick. I mean, I think people see the loose stool and go, oh no, I'm not going to do that. I need that hard poop. That's what I need. Right?
Very true. Very true. And you know, just I even tell people it's great to expose dogs to a variety of things. Put a little, even if they want to diversify their diet and vary their diet, to put a little chicken, to put a little fish in a dog's bowl. You know, nightly when you eat something, it doesn't hurt them to eat a little real chicken, a little real fish, and get in some, or some carrots or some peas or some green beans, and it gets their intestinal ready for those kind of ingredients.
Which is something real food should be for everyone you love in your life.
Exactly.
You shouldn't be giving some fake astronaut food. Well, this is almost like food, and we have to take it up in space. Like, would you rather give orange juice or would you rather give Tang? Tang probably doesn't exist anymore. Remember, it wasn't that what they – I don't know. I always think it's what they gave the astronauts to drink, but that's absurd. They might have given them real orange juice. But there's something that somehow people think also there's this myth if I feed people food / table food, then they'll beg. Could you talk about that? I mean, what is that nutty idea? Like, the dog is only going to want your roast chicken if he gets a taste of it later on his own dinner, as if he couldn't smell it from the minute it comes in the house raw. I mean, he watched that whole chicken's transformation from a raw thing to a roasted thing. He's been aware of that chicken from the minute that it left the grocery store, right? So people think, but if I don't give him a taste of it, he'll never get a taste for it. Is that something that you have people say to you? Oh, I don't feed people food, doctor. Don't you worry.
Yeah, they come to me, and before they know me very well as new clients or ones that haven't talked to me about this stuff, will say, they look at me and I ask them, what do you feed? I ask every single person what they feed, and then we go over the short version of what I think is important. But they say, well, they look at me and they go, I don't feed people food. And I look at them like, that's too bad.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So you just feed processed little nuggets then. That's too bad.
Yeah.
But, exactly. I think that feeding real food is really important. And people just have a bad feeling about it because certain human foods cause the biggest problems, like fatty beef. Dogs can be allergic to beef, and a big hunk of beef fat in a dog that's used to a Cheerio-like food its whole life can send their intestines and pancreas into orbit. And so that's one of the biggest things that cause all the anxiety over human food, and also bones. People feed dogs T-bones. And what happens, they're sharp, and they can cause injury. And so that whole thing is those injuries and surgeries have lumped the T-bones into the people food thing. And I think that's, along with pancreatitis and excess fat, has made that a bad word. But if you feed, like you said, Tracy, healthy human food is also healthy for dogs.
Well, you know, that's very curious about the fat, because dogs have a need for quite a lot of fat, right? I mean, isn't that one of the things that you talk about in the dog diet answer book? Because it has a lot of answers. Fat is not a bad thing when you're feeding a dog. But by the same token, I usually, when I cook food for the girls, I do random vegetables. And I either use ground turkey, not ground by me, ground, you know, in the turkey world, or ground chicken. And when it's on sale, I'll get the organic, but only if it's on sale, to be honest. And then sometimes I'll try the ground beef. It'll say 80-20. You think, oh, that's 80% meat, 20% fat. So I mix that in with some of the chicken and turkey. And then when I put it in all the containers and I freeze it, there's big bunches of this white fat that I have to dig out of there just from that small amount of beef. So that concerns me, because that kind of fat is also industrially farmed beef, let's be honest. I mean, who can afford anything else? That's not good, right? That is the fat that's not good, or is some of that fat okay? I know chicken skin is okay, isn't it?
Yeah, chicken skin, actually, what I do now is I was read a book by Steve Brown, and he talks about fat in great detail. And he talks about the fat in chicken skin and also the fat in cattle to be more saturated. In those areas, and saturated fat is some of the fat that causes problems in dogs.
So therefore,
he talks about muscle fat and organ fat being different,
and
that's more of the unsaturated fat.
Well, how do we know which the fat is from that piece of beef, whether it was from their muscle or just fatty deposit?
Yeah, that's the thing. If it's a byproduct, you don't know. So I try to avoid, and you know, the beef is the biggest allergen or
no, I didn't know that.
Dogs have an intolerance for beef. So I usually shy away from beef. But in some clients have used it for a long time, which lets me know and reminds me that it is an individual thing. But
in terms of a general reaction, you're going to get more of a reaction to beef, huh? Because I just bought all these giant cans of Halo food because it comes in a giant can, and feeling thrifty, I think it's less per ounce. And I have these two huge dogs, so I thought, well, I divide a big can between the two of them. So I got a case of salmon, a case of chicken, and a case of beef.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, if you rotated in and out, I mean, they could get more used to it. So what fat is better? They get fish oil, but I mean, should you add olive oil or not?
Well,
when it's a canned food, is it perfectly, wonderfully balanced and you don't have to do nothing in the fat department?
You know, it's funny. The fish oil, a lot of, and you've read them for people too. There's so much written about fish oil, as it's good for the heart and good for the brain and good for the muscles. And so I think I always supplement my dogs with fish oil. And so olive oil, I was doing that off and on, but now I've mostly done just fish oil.
Because isn't it true? It's funny. I just talked on Holistic Vets to a vet called Carol Osborne, who has a degree in human nutrition, but I forget, it has some fancy degree that you can have in applied nutrition or something. And she was referring to olive oil as having omega-3s, but I thought olive oil was omega-6s, which is something we all have too much of. What did you think?
It's omega, yeah, the olive oil is a monounsaturated fatty acid, and it's not the polyunsaturated fatty acids. It's more of a mix of, I do think it does have some omegas in it, but not near the amount of fish oil.
And that's why, I mean, I personally use Nordic Naturals because they make a pet oil, and
you can
dose it for a big dog because it comes in a pouring bottle, as opposed to having to give to so many capsules if you have so many pounds of weight. I started taking it again myself. I thought, well, if it's good for these dogs and it's going to be good for their brain and memory and heart, well, if I better take it or I'll forget to feed them if my memory goes, right? I mean,
I take it and I give it to my dogs every day, and I buy it in a combination with the glucosamine and chondroitin because I have an 18-year-old dog.
You have an 18-year-old dog? What kind of dog? That's so cool. I'm jealous.
She's a little terrier cross.
Oh, wow.
And she was getting pretty sore, so I upped her fish oil and gave her glucosamine chondroitin. And, after about 30 days, she started running up and down the stairs again.
Isn't that something? It is such an anti-inflammatory.
Yeah, it's used as an anti-inflammatory, and the glucosamine chondroitin is used as also joint nutrition.
Yep.
It's amazing nutrition impacts them. And of course, she eats all great canned foods, and then I cook for them every couple weeks, and supplement them with the cooked food too. So that's
an interesting point. Rather than having to worry about a really beautifully, perfectly well balanced diet, if you're cooking yourself for the dogs, if you alternate canned, which by law and by formula is really balanced, then you can feed just a dinner of celery, green beans, carrots, rice, and chicken intermittently. Right? It doesn't have to be every meal is perfectly balanced any more than our own are.
And that's what I've done with my 18-year-old dog for about 14 years. So,
wow.
I really feel like, and I've had clients now that have used these cooking techniques that I use and for 10 or 15 years. So I feel pretty good about it. I feel pretty good about seeing the hundreds of dogs go in and out of my practice with no troubles due to deficiency. So, yeah, that's the way a lot of people do it.
And the home cooked is fun to do. I mean, the crock pot, someone gave me a big crock pot and I thought it was too big for me because I was like a family of one plus two dogs. So I gave it to somebody who volunteers in a soup kitchen, which was nice of me, but too bad I didn't keep it, darn it. Because it would have been the perfect thing to cook. You could put a big one. You could put two fryer chickens. You could put oats and rice.
Oh, wow, that's a big one.
Yeah, I mean, that would be... That would make life really easy. Is it true that you can, if you keep the crock pot going long enough, you can even leave the bones in if they get crumbly and cooked enough? Or is that a bit, do you think that's a bit extreme?
No, I did that for many, many years. I cooked, when I first started, that was my goal to try to make it nutritionally complete. And that would be involving the natural bones in there, which have calcium, magnesium, and phosphorus in the right combination.
Wow.
Because you figure if the bone's in there in about the right proportion that it would be in prey, it's got to be close.
Yes.
So I put liver in there, I put organs in there and bones, and I cooked up the bones in the fryer for about anywhere from 14 to 20 to 18 hours. And it took that long to soften the bones, and then I just crushed them up with my fingers. And it has all that good joints in there, so that's
yes,
joint nutrition.
Yes, all the cartilage, right?
I mean,
it actually has a value.
So I really think, and I did that for many years, but now my 18-year-old dog, she just hates when I leave the bones in.
Oh, my, so the princess.
The princess says, no, I'm off that now.
That, I'm sorry, that's just too much work for my little old teeth. But
yeah, she just doesn't like, it does have a different taste, the marrow and the bones
make
it taste different.
Right,
so she's off that, so I can no longer do that with her.
She had a long run with it, right?
Yeah, she had a long run, 10 years, well, about 13 years. So Yeah, so I've done that for many years, and then some clients have told me they use a pressure cooker, and it's much quicker.
Oh, well, I do have a pressure cooker. I don't know.
Yeah.
Even though it's a modern Italian good one, isn't that always that scary feeling that the top's going to blow off? I mean, the tops haven't blown off of pressure cookers since our great grandmother's day. But there's something about that, you know, release valve, and you're like, oh, it's a rocket, it's going to take off. But I have one, and I use it for risotto twice a year. I could break it out and throw a chicken in there. That's a really good idea. Although there's something about the crock pot that just, it reminds me of the French country cooks who keep a low simmering pot on the back of their stove, and they just throw things in it, little bits and scraps of this and that, and there's a constant bubble going, you know, just burbling along, and that's why it can cook for so long and never go bad or go off, because there's enough heat in it. Greg, just to finish up, you have a gorgeous picture on a certain page of a tin of sardines and a beautiful piece of brown bread with the sardines on it. Let's talk, if you would, just about how you bring up sardines in the book. And, well, I think it seems to be an awfully tasty and inexpensive way to feed the omega-3 fatty acids with a good protein source, too.
Yeah, it's great. I talked to some nutritionists, and they were telling me that the perfect nutrition for dogs is meat in general, liver, eggs, and fish. So I use the fish. I just walk around the market, the grocery store.
Yes.
All these years, and I just kind of started looking at. I look at labels and look at the percentages, and look at different things that they're in the that are available in the market, so I can tell clients to, you know, that's where you can get liver, like you can get phosphate farmed liver or organic liver that's in an 8-ounce tin or an 8-ounce plastic jug, and then you can also get sardines, and so I started looking at all the different labels and how they're packed, and of course tomato sauce wouldn't be your first choice,
right? But there's lots in olive oil.
Or peppers, you know, there's a lot of variation.
Or mustard.
But you can use sardines packed in water.
Yep.
And most dogs just love it. And it's you get a little bit of the sardine skeleton in there, so you're getting a little calcium, magnesium,
and
phosphorus.
The skin that's
your
got
omegas.
Nice. Yep.
It's a great thing.
And so often would you recommend the sardines, like 2-3 times a week? Add that to their food?
Yep, I definitely would. Yeah, you can get a tin, and depending on the dog, a bigger dog can eat, easily. I had a lab, Tucker, and he would easily eat 2 or 3 tins a week.
Wow.
And my little 10-pound dog, Maisie, she eats 2 or 3 sardines 2 or 3 times a week.
So it's a really great food, and if you shop well, you can buy that tin for $1.
Exactly.
You're getting a lot of quality.
$10
Yeah, yep. That's right. And you can get a lot of quality, smaller on the feeding, you know, on the profile of having mercury or anything. And sardine is a small-bodied fish, so it doesn't have any of those problems of the big-bodied fish. Greg, this book is wonderful. I really think you've done all of us a great service. I thought I had sort of seen a lot of books about food and diets. And I have, and I've really not found one until your book, The Dog Diet Answer Book, that really explains things and leans towards the better quality nutrition. But you've helped us to find ways to manage it and make it affordable. And, of course, if you were feeding a big bowl with 2 or 3 cups of kibble in it, the equivalent of that is half of a large can of canned food with a bit of some added. So it's not, you don't get to give the same amount of dry food. You have to give the same quality or quantity of calories, right? And
right.
Even though you think, well, my dog, that was so little, she ate it so fast. But it just as a final word, could you talk about the satiety or the satiation that comes from eating a high quality protein fat food and how it makes you feel fuller longer than eating probably the processed carbs? Can you just explain that?
Yeah, what I think is dogs, first of all, dogs are wolfed down anything without really feeling the calories for a little while. So what I do is spread out. Sometimes it's nice to spread out the food for a couple of feedings, even in a short period of time, to where they'll feel fuller.
Oh, that's a good idea.
A little bit. You feed them, and then you feed them again in an hour if you have a chance. and then they'll slowly they'll feel the effects of the first feeding and the second feeding, and they won't be so just so ravenous.
That is so that, really a good idea. Otherwise, well, you're right. It goes down in one bolted thing, and then they're like, "Well, where's the rest of it?"
They don't even know what they ate at first.
Yes.
You know, it's like, well, it's a cup, it's gone. It's two cups, it's gone. It's
right.
It's just
and
gone.
Not only that, but they're used to more of a full feeling, and
right.
You have this silly guilt, like, oh, the poor thing must still be hungry. You've actually just fed them more fully and more satisfyingly than feeding loads of highly processed carbs, which in
right.
the end is, you know, you're going to get hungrier sooner. This
yeah.
will sustain you for longer. So I love the idea of spreading it out. Let's say you have to go to a job and you're used to giving the dog breakfast at 7:30 or 8. So give part of that portion the minute you get up, and then another portion while you're having your coffee, and another portion right before you go out. It doesn't matter how little it is.
Right.
It's just that if the other problem is the canned food smells so good to them and tastes so good, they want more because it's heaven. So they can
right.
act or seem really hungry. They just say, that is so good.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, I get you. I hear you. But that's how much you need. So it,
but
it's,
yeah, the protein and the fat and the canned foods tends to control hunger a little better.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
And that's what people are finding on those high protein, high fat diets.
Right.
That they don't have that sugar, you know, like your blood sugar goes up, it goes down. They get those cravings. It's more like you're comfortable. Your body is using its fuel well. Anyway, it's
right.
a great book, Greg, and you've done us all a great service. Anyone in Gilroy, California already knows that because they probably already go to Greg Martinez. But the rest of us can also go to your YouTube channels, and I'll have links to all of the good stuff you put online for all of us with the podcast so people can go there and see a spay neuter. Or see you cook in a crock pot. It's your choice, right?
Yeah, but just don't eat and watch my surgery.
Exactly. Precisely. Thank you so much, Greg. Take
okay,
care.
Thank you, Tracy.
Bye-bye.
The Radio Pet Lady Network is brought to you with the generous support of Nordic Naturals, omega-3 fish oil products that provide dogs and cats with the same premium quality omega-3 fish oils as for people. Research shows that even the best diets are deficient in the essential fatty acids found in omega-3 oils. However, not all fish oil is created equal. The Nordic Naturals' difference is that their oil comes from Norway, where they use responsibly sourced, healthy wild fish and third-party testing to guarantee purity and freshness.